Welcome to Locked On Yankees. I'm Jesse Spector, freelance sports guy, formerly the Daily News and the Sporting News, now a bunch of other places, including here, and happy to be with you again for another episode. The Yankees are 5-1 on this road trip now after their victory over the Blue Jays on the strength of Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton home runs in the 13th inning in Toronto, the only runs of the game, a 3-0 affair. Judge was a two-run shot. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in just a second, as well as Sonny Gray. A little later on the show, Britt Huber will be here talking about Madison Bumgarner and the trade rumors involving him, especially now that Jordan Montgomery is going to be out for the season with Tommy John surgery that he's going to undergo on Thursday. So look forward to that. And yeah, that's what's going on. Yankees still a game behind the Red Sox, although they are a game ahead of the Red Sox in the loss column. The Red Sox having played more games because the Yankees cannot avoid weather wherever they go, except for Toronto, where they have a dome. Miracle of miracles. So the Yankees have been able to play all of their games this season in Toronto against the Blue Jays. They are now 4-2 north of the border, having split that season opening series and swept the two games there this week. They will wrap up the road trip back in New York against the Mets Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then have a long homestand that is interrupted by a road makeup doubleheader of sorts in Washington. That's all down the road. For now, the Yankees have a real kind of trademark win for the 2018 season, at least as far as, you know, how they drew it up with Judge and Stanton both going deep in the 13th. And it really is kind of a hallmark of this Yankees team. And you saw it on Tuesday night as well, that, you know, Marco Estrada was kind of mowing the Yankees down, but eventually you're going to get to somebody who cannot keep the Yankees in the park. On Tuesday night, it was Miguel Andujar with the grand slam and Aaron Hicks with the three-run shot, backing CC Sabathia in the Yankees 7-2 win as they bounce back from the Monday nightcap loss in the doubleheader in Detroit. The Yankees had previously swept what became a two-game series in Baltimore thanks to the rain down there. Like I said, it's been weird. But what I really want to talk about here is Sonny Gray. 8 scoreless innings from Sonny Gray, and of course he winds up with a no decision, but you know, so far in June, Sonny Gray has pitched 14 innings, and he's given up one run, and that's it. You know, 14 innings, one run on 6 hits with 14 strikeouts. That's darn good. And most importantly, only 2 walks. And both of those walks were in the 8 innings of 2-hit ball that he threw against the Blue Jays on Wednesday night. So is it possible that we have seen Sonny Gray turn a corner? I think we've thought that a couple of times before, but it certainly seems like if he's getting the control in line, that's really been such a thing for him, is the nibbling and, you know, not attacking hitters and the inefficiency. And to go 8 innings, 99 pitches, he was through the first 2 innings, I think, on 14, and you could tell that he was on, and he didn't have that one bad inning that he sometimes has, that he often has, especially as a Yankee. And it wound up being a sort of Sonny Gray classic, going back to his days with the Oakland A's, and really, you know, the second half of last season with the Yankees, where, you know, Sonny Gray pitches well and then doesn't get any run support. And in this case, Sonny Gray pitched great, and he got 0 run support because the Yankees were unable to do anything against Sam Gaviglio, who, had you heard of Sam Gaviglio before this game on Wednesday night? It's just one of those weird things, but it worked out well for the Yankees in the end, and maybe Sonny Gray turns into part of the answer of what the Yankees need in their rotation going forward. It'll be interesting to see, and something that, you know, we have to follow all season, because we all know that the potential is there with Sonny Gray. You know, you saw what he was in Oakland when he really burst on the scene and helped the A's as a playoff team, and it was a big part of things there. When that was a real good team. So we'll see what goes forward with Sonny Gray. We know what Luis Severino is. We've seen flashes from Masahiro Tanaka. And CC Sabathia continues. I mean, just seven great innings. He gave up two home runs on Tuesday night, but man, has he been good all season long, and just continuing to, especially after Yankee losses, coming in and pitching the way that he needs to pitch. And the Yankees bullpen, you know, even though they had to throw five innings in extras, the ninth and then four extra innings, they've been solid, and they've been getting a little bit more rest lately, so you know, that bodes well for the Yankees as well as we go forward. And as we go forward, if you would like to advertise on Locked On Yankees, you should do so. And you can do that by sending an email to lockedonnyy@gmail.com. That's lockedonnyy@gmail.com. All right. Joined now by Britt Huber, who has written a piece for lockedonyankees.com about the Yankees trading for Madison Bumgarner and exactly why that is not going to happen. And I have to say that I agree, and I don't really even understand where all of this came from. The just because Jordan Montgomery went down, you know, he's going to have Tommy John surgery here on Thursday, that all of a sudden that would put the Yankees in position to acquire a guy who isn't available in a trade anyway? But you're more familiar with the, as somebody who lives in the Bay Area and follows the Giants closely, familiar with their end of the thinking on this. And I think the good point that you made here is that, yeah, it takes two teams to make a trade. And like, not only are the Yankees not going to, you know, give up what it would be necessary to get Bumgarner, especially in early June, a guy who has the rest of this year plus a $12 million option for next year, which is ludicrously cheap for a guy of his ability. Right. The Giants are simply not going to do that. Like, that is not how any of this works.
Right, and it was sort of, I was kind of taken aback when I started seeing people talking about it, because it does sound, to me at least, it sounds so out there, like just immediately. And, you know, I realize that I have a slightly different perspective because I do pay attention to the Giants more. So I have a different sort of read on how their front office tends to function and stuff than, you know, maybe a Yankee fan does. But, you know, I saw a couple beat writers, admittedly kind of half-jokingly, but, like, it was getting enough traction that beat writers were mentioning it.
Yeah,
which I was surprising just don't get to me.
Like, it's not a,
no.
And yeah, that's just that's first of all, that kind of trade is just not in the Giants' playbook anyway.
No, not at all. And that's sort of the biggest thing, almost. That again, I get that people, unless you pay too much attention to their wheelings and dealings, that maybe it doesn't sort of register, but if anything, the Giants will keep people longer than they should, will bring people back, will give them more money than they should, will give them an extra 5 years on the contract. Like, they're not an organization that cuts bait on people with any frequency, like, whatsoever. And
not just homegrown guys.
Yeah.
Like, Jeff Samardzija is still there.
Right.
Like, how was he not traded last year?
I just laugh about that, but right. I mean, and that's just sort of a good example that having trading Jeff Samardzija last year when they were scraping the bottom of the barrel, and hadn't really decided what they were going to do for this year would have been kind of the obvious move in a lot of organizations, and they still were like, "No, we think we can fix it." You know, we think we can retool and be back in contention next year, so we're, you know, we're not going to do it. And whether you agree with that strategy or not, you can make an argument either way, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an indicator of just sort of how they operate, that trading Matt Duffy 2 years ago at the deadline was, it's like people are still talking about it, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, as somebody who had been in the organization since he was drafted, but had only been in the majors for a year and a half at the time, and had only really played a season because he had been hurt so much of 2016. So that was, in theory, or at least on paper, like the least painful move they could have made, and it still was one of those things where the fan base at large was like, you're not doing that again. What are you talking about? Bobby Evans was having to, like, make public apologies at season ticket holder events. Like, it does not go over well.
Why is that with the Giants? Because I feel like that is... they're not alone in that, but I feel like they really at least as giant market, hey, huge market teams, yes, giant market, okay, you know what I mean. As far as like really huge market, big budget teams go, most of them do not have that kind of sentimentality.
No.
I wonder why that is, if you have any kind of read on that.
I think it's sort of a combination of there being a little bit of sort of lingering, like, lovable loser mentality that clearly is no longer deserved and hasn't been in a number of years at this point. But, you know, there were a lot of lean years there in the middle. Team almost left when I was a kid. Like, this is... There's been some weird stuff. So there is a little bit of sort of that mentality to it. A little bit of, like, Cubs West to a certain extent. And to a certain extent, I think a lot of it goes back to Barry Bonds, too, because Barry Bonds came to the Giants right around the same time that Brian Sabian took over as general manager.
Yeah.
And sort of the whole thing was always very much like, this is our guy, you all hate him, we don't care. So there was very much a sense of, like, we know that you all hate him. We know nobody else gives him the respect we think he deserves. Very much sort of a chip on the shoulder. And that carried over in a lot of ways, I think. So there is still this sort of sense of, you know, you guys don't appreciate them. You don't deserve them. They stay here. Like, so this afternoon, actually, during the game, Mike Kirko made a comment. He used an analogy I hadn't heard before, something to the effect of that in Chicago, they treat you like they're your mother. Mm-hmm. And in Philadelphia, they treat you like you're a god. And in San Francisco, they treat you like they're your grandmother.
Yeah. Okay.
It's kind of goofy and other, but it's a very good sort of encapsulation of what that relationship is. And I think it's really easy for sort of outside observers to kind of write it off as like, oh, they're soft. And maybe a little bit, that's true. But it's very much a sort of like, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed.
Yeah.
Like, attitude. I mean, I saw more Barry Zito starts than I care to admit. And, you know, even Barry Zito making $100 bajillion and pitching terribly for almost the entirety of that contract, he didn't even really get booed. It was more just like a prolonged sigh.
Yeah.
And that's sort of indicative of just what that relationship is. Like, once you're there, it's like, all right, you're ours. We got to take care of you. And I think that that's part of why the fan base is that way, is that the front office has kind of been that way as well. And there is just this expectation that you're not going to leave. And if you leave, it's because you want it to.
So that'll be at the end of the 2019 season when somebody throws a boatload of money at him, or he'll stay there because the Giants have boatloads of money that they can throw at him too.
And right.
Why would anybody want to leave there?
And I think the reality is that if, unless forced, the Giants would much prefer to keep as much of the current core intact for as long as they're productive and bring prospects up to fill in holes, find people to fill in holes, then have to do like a full-scale tear down. Not to say that they might not get to a point where they have to, because it's obviously difficult to rebuild on the fly and sort of do it piecemeal, but it's going to be like a path of last resort if they do that.
Right. So we've talked a lot here about the Giants, about, you know, and about their mindset as far as why a Bumgarner trade doesn't happen. And I agree with you that I really don't think it does. Because I just, yeah, is that like if they were like, okay, well, if the Angels were like, we'll give you Mike Trout for Bumgarner, yeah, they would do it, I think.
Right.
But like, that's not like the Yankees aren't saying, oh, yeah, we'll give you Gleyber Torres for Bumgarner and, you know, and throw in Clint Frazier too. Sure, we'll do that. You guys can have.
Right.
Like, yeah. That's not happening. So, like, realistically, there's no trade there to be made between these two teams, especially because the Giants are at 500 in a division that is being led by the Rockies, right?
The
Rockies went back into
and
first
the Giants, place. They are, and the Giants, I think, are a half game and a half back at place, this yeah. point.
Okay, right. The Diamondbacks went back into first, even though the Giants have beaten them, but the Rockies are going to tie them for first after they take care of the Reds as we talk, so yes. Okay.
Right. They're all kind of and they're all kind of bunched up. The Giants, I think, are only a game and a half back at this point. So, you know, it's like you can't really sell to the front office or ownership or to the fans that, yeah, we're gonna cut bait and we're gonna start selling pieces off.
So lots of reasons that this doesn't happen from the Giants side of things. Now, let's talk about why this, you know, not just why this doesn't happen from the Yankee side of things, because I think that we get they're not going to give up what it's going to take, which is an outlandish amount. But
right.
What do they, like, the Yankees, it's not like they haven't been scouting the starting pitching market anyway. And right. And what I wonder is, at least, you know, as you see it, because neither one of us is on the inside, and the Yankees are a ship that does not leak as far as this kind of stuff is concerned. I think that we saw it, you know, from the Stanton trade being the most notable recent one.
Right.
That, like, the Yankees often don't make the moves that they are supposed to make, and they do make moves that you had no idea was coming. That being said, what kind of direction can they go as far as hunting for a starting pitcher? Because I don't think that they necessarily need that ace type guy with the bullpen that they have and the rotation that they have in place already, because, you know, the guy that you're trying to fill in for is Jordan Montgomery, who was, you know, the four or five depending upon how you look at it. And I know that, you know, Tanaka is inconsistent, and Sonny Gray, who, you know, eight scoreless innings on Wednesday night, wonderful, not somebody who has really earned the trust. And CC Sabathia is older than I am, so that's
right.
And I feel very old most days. So yeah, like beyond Luis Severino, there's not a lot of dependability. But, you know, can you find a dependable? What do you look for? Because, like, the guy who springs to mind for me is Jacob deGrom, but I also think that the Mets would hold up the Yankees for a ludicrous ransom because.
Right.
That's the way the Mets do business when it comes to the Yankees.
I mean, I think in general, what you're looking for is you're looking for like a 2-3 starter. Yeah. You're not looking for an ace, and you're not really looking for a 5, because, like, we've got those. What you're really looking for is somebody that can be reliable in the middle, take some of the pressure off guys like Tanaka and Sonny Gray, and be better than a Jordan Montgomery or whoever is in that back end of the rotation, and just sort of be there to take the pressure off a little bit, not wear out the bullpen, give you another option when you can't send Severino out.
Yeah.
And that's, on the one hand, there's lots more of those, so it's an easier order to fill. But it's also a little bit harder to scout in the sense that there are a lot of those, and they're not necessarily all created equal. So then it becomes much more of a question of how do you make it work given, you know, the type of pitchers available, given the teams involved. I mean, Cole Hamels is the one that I keep seeing people mention as well. I feel like that's kind of maybe the way to go, not necessarily him specifically, but either somebody who was more of an ace but who is, you know, towards the tail end of their career, or just sort of maybe not quite that anymore, or somebody who is, you know, good but not, like, right, setting the world on fire, you know?
Cole Hamels to me is, and I know that people, you know, made the argument, and in fact, you know, it was in your piece about Bumgarner, that like Bumgarner would be the Verlander type of acquisition. I think Cole Hamels could be that. Like, when you look at what Verlander was in Detroit and where he was going and, you know, what was up with him going into that trade with the Astros, I feel like, you know, that's kind of where Cole Hamels is at with the Rangers now. And if you get him into a spot where, you know, he gets back with a contending team, and, you know, lefty in Yankee Stadium is always a nice thing to be.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that, you know, maybe the obvious one is the one that makes the most sense sometimes.
Yeah, and I think in a lot of ways it does make sense for, I mean, exactly what you said, and that you can sort of hang your hat to a certain extent on faith in the coaching staff and the rest of the team's ability to sort of bring out the best in somebody. So, again, like with Verlander and the Astros, he was pitching well before that trade, but he had been unbelievable since then. That he's been better than advertised because he works with their coaching staff, he's happy there, whatever it is. So if you can get something like that from somebody like Cole Hamels, then it's a bargain, as much as it sounds weird to say bargain with that kind of name pitcher, but that's kind of functionally what it turns into.
Yeah, and Cole Hamels is at a point where he's, you know, he's got an option for next year at $20 million, and it does vest. I think that he's on track to have it vest if it continues to pitch exactly. And he hasn't been bad. Maybe he's not on track. I don't think he pitched enough innings last year. He would have to pitch an insane amount of innings this year. So maybe it's not going to vest. Either way, you know, he's...
And even if he did, like, that's not the worst thing, you know?
I mean, his walk rate is pretty much where it's been the last few years, which is up from when he pitched for the Phillies, but, you know, you do sometimes walk more guys in the American League. Strikeouts are still strong. He's hit 10 batters this year, which is kind of insane, but...
Wow.
Yeah, he leads the majors in hit by pitches, and it's like the third time in his career that he's even hit double digit guys. That's
wow.
Weird.
That is weird.
That's weird. The home run rate is through the roof, but, you know, I don't know whether you make heads or tails of that, and, you know, if that's just a couple of bad starts. I haven't looked that deeply into Cole Hamels this year, but like he's pitching to a 3.63 ERA, which
you know. Fine. That's right. That's fine. And that's kind of what you're looking for. You're not looking for, I'm going to start you in game 7 of the World Series. You're looking for, like, you're fine. Like, you're going to be the bridge. You will get to the bullpen. You will keep everybody else from falling apart. And just let everybody breathe a little bit on those second, third, fourth days.
And you know what? If you did have to start that guy in game 7 of the World Series, you could.
Right. It's not the worst thing.
Cesar Sabathia started game 7 of the ALCS last year. And I know that it didn't work out. But, like, everybody was pretty comfortable having that be the guy.
Right, and it didn't not work out because of CeCe.
Right.
Like,
no, it didn't work out because they scored 0 runs.
Right, that's an impediment to winning a baseball game.
Usually.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And especially on with a really young staff overall, there is something to be said for having a guy who's sort of been there and... You know, not that they don't have that. Obviously, they have CeCe Sabathia, who is huge in that regard. But it's never bad to bring in somebody else with that kind of experience who could be sort of that resource for younger pitchers and sort of that stability.
Yeah. No, I
you know, I can talk myself into it.
Yeah, especially if, because with his salary, the market for him is limited. You know, to the few teams that can afford him, and especially in this weird, like, luxury tax era year that we're having, you know, that
right.
makes it all the more so. And the Yankees have been sitting here for all this time. And, like, that, the amount of space that they have grows because it's, like, prorated over the year. It's, like, all the money that they've been kind of banking through these first, you know, 2 months of the season goes. And they can afford a, you know, they have the space to afford Hamels anyway and still stay under the 197. But by waiting right. into the season, they can afford Hamels plus, you know, another upgrade of some kind. And Yankees have...
And I think this is also a situation, too, where this is the Yankees' advantage. They can spend money that other teams can't or won't spend. So that right there is part of how they can do business in a tight market that... They can take on salary that somebody else wouldn't. So immediately, you're limiting the competition, and you're saving yourself some prospects because you can say, yeah, fine, we'll take on the $20 million or whatever it is.
Yeah. So we'll see what they do over the next 2 months up to the deadline. We're going to have a lot more time to talk about this and talk about things.
2 months sounds like... Yeah. 2 months feels like a really long time when you say that.
It does, but it's... The season started 2 months ago, a little more than 2 months ago, and it feels like we've zipped through that, so here we are.
That's true. Here we are.
In another 2 months, there will be. So, and we'll keep talking through that. So, as always, great talking to you, Britt. Thanks for the time and coming on, you know, to do this once again.
Sure, thanks for having me.
All right, so thanks to Britt Huber, and thanks to you for listening, and if you'd like to find Locked On Yankees, you can do so on iTunes, on Stitcher, and wherever else it is you find your podcast. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review, and come on back because we're here all the time. Thanks again for listening. I'm Jesse Spector. We'll see you next time.